Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our Blog Talk Radio show, Breast Cancer in Asian American Women, Incidence, Risk Factors, and Prevention. My name is Ariana Sibaldi, and I work with Columbia's Department of Surgery, Office of External Affairs. Today we are joined by three experts, Dr. Margaret Chen, Assistant Professor of Clinical Surgery at New York Presbyterian Hospital, Columbia University Medical Center's Clinical Breast Center Program, Dr. Ming-Der Chang, Vice President of American Cancer Society, Eastern Division Asian Initiative, and Ms. Jessie Lau, Director of Patient and Family Services of American Cancer Society, Eastern Division Asian Initiative. While Asian women have the lowest incidence of breast cancer, that incidence is rising dramatically both in Asians abroad as well as in Asian Americans. What's more, it tends to affect Asian women at far younger ages than their non-Asian counterparts, and often in more aggressive forms. Today, Dr. Chen, Dr. Chang, and Jesse will discuss breast cancer, its incidence, risk factors, and prevention, focusing on how breast cancer affects Asian American women. Now, I'd like to welcome our guests. We're so glad to have you as part of our series. Let's begin with introductions, starting with you, Dr. Chen. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your position here at New York Presbyterian.
Sure, thank you. Hello, everybody. 大家好. I'm Dr. Margaret Chen. I am a breast cancer surgeon at New York Presbyterian, Columbia University Medical Center.
Thank you, Dr. Chen, and welcome. Also with us today is Dr. Chang. Dr. Chang, please introduce yourself as well.
Hi, how are you and everybody? I am Ming-Der Chang. I'm the Vice President of the American Cancer Society Asian Initiative in New York, New Jersey.
Thank you, Dr. Chang. And Ms. Jessie Lau is also here with us today. Jessie, please tell us a bit about yourself as well.
Sure. I'm Jessie Lau. I'm the Director of Patient and Family Services of ACS, Eastern Division Asian Initiative. My primary function is to collaborating with some health system and oncologists in order to provide non-support to cancer patients and their family. We implement support services to the health system and also physician side as to enhance the service to patients.
Thank you. So before I begin, I'd like to cover a few housekeeping issues. Today we're taking questions live. So listeners, you can call into our number at 347-539-5189 to speak with one of our experts. Alternatively, if you would like to answer questions via Twitter, you can always use our handle at Columbia Surgery. We'll try to get to as many questions today within the next 30 minutes. However, if you submitted a question and were unable to get to it, we'll follow up with you through email. So let's begin with our first question. So the first question comes from Elisa L. Historically, breast cancer incidence has been lower in China compared to Caucasian women in the U.S., although it is increasingly likely due to the adoption of Western lifestyle and diet. What happens to a Chinese woman's risk as she migrates to America? Dr. Chang, would you like to answer the first question?
Yes, sure. I think the study, we don't have very comprehensive longitudinal following the woman from migrate from China to America. But there's recently there's a data to show present at California. They compare different subgroup of Asian women to Caucasian women, and but they didn't really divide them into how long they've been in America. In this case, the incident rate of Chinese women and Filipino women is lower than American Caucasian, but Japanese women, American Japanese women, the rate is as high as American. And the general feeling is Japanese women in America, Japanese American has been living in America a little longer. There might be a trend that the longer you live in America, the rate of the incident of breast cancer is approaching to the Caucasian counterpart. And we also see that in China. I think in China, if you look at the breast cancer rate in the major city, the rate is increased dramatically. The hypothesis is adopting the Western style lifestyle and the diet. But there's no very clear-cut evidence, scientific evidence, to support that.
Great. That's a very informative answer. Thank you. So we actually have another two questions submitted from Ayanta P. Her first question has to do with how do you define cure in breast cancer? Dr. Chan, would you like to field this question again?
Sure. I'm not a physician, but as a public health worker and also community educator, I think our answer from the American Cancer Society is definitely we want to find a cure. And I think there may be a cure in the future. That means maybe that's preventable with type of vaccine, or this is preventable by better diagnose earlier, or find the causative factor. But in the meantime, I think the breast cancer, because of the advance of the science and the research, I think breast cancer now is a manageable disease. So I think in the meantime, although the breast cancer is not completely curable yet, but I think a lot of the breast cancer is manageable.
As our understanding about breast cancer is increasing, what we do find is that there are different types of breast cancer. So for ER-plus breast cancers, these are the patients who do have a long-term risk of the cancer coming back in their breast, even 20 years, even 25 years after the breast cancer was initially treated. So it's very important for women who are long after their treatment of their initial cancer to continue surveillance, continue checkup with their doctors, and have continued yearly mammograms.
Thank you both for those very informative answers. So actually, Yantopi did submit a second question. She also asks, have you ever seen any patient alive for over 25 years after breast irradiation treatment for breast cancer? Jesse, will you be able to answer this question?
Yeah, sure. I think I'm not a physician, so I'm not treating patients, but in Asian Initiative, we have this breast cancer survivor support group for youth. So there are many survivors who come in, and then they're talking, and then they help each other. I do see patients who's been survived after diagnosis and treating. And while the question is asking is after breast radiation treatment, so most often women who got, to only do the radiation after surgery is probably in the early stage, if it's stage 0 or stage 1, which according to statistics, that the survival rate for 5 years is 100%, and even for stage 2A is 92%. So with that said, that the living for over 25 years is very optimistic. We know that the average diagnosis age of diagnosis of breast cancer is usually over 40. So with that said, that patient has to, you know, we see will be beyond 65 years old. And in our group, I do see patients with that situation, is a few of them, what that's also be counted as is possible. It's not impossible.
Great. Okay. So I actually would like to direct the next question to Dr. Chen. Dr. Chen, this question comes from Shav. Is there any need for continual core biopsy in SCC with mild and moderate hyperplasia? If yes, how many times in a period?
Sure. That's a good question. FCC, or fibrocystic change of the breast, is actually very common in women's breasts. There is no significant association with risk of breast cancer, so it does not increase the risk of breast cancer significantly. So at this point, there is no need for continued biopsy. It would just be surveillance, clinical breast exams, as well as yearly mammograms.
Great. Okay, so we also have received a few questions about mammograms from Hannah A., and Dr. Chan, I think that you'll be able to answer these. Hannah A. asks, I am approaching my 65th birthday. How often should I consider receiving mammograms after the age of 65? How often are they recommended? Dr. Chang?
According to American Cancer Society guidelines, I think women age 40 and above should do mammogram every year, annual mammogram. And I think age is not a factor as long as that it's in good health. Of course, if you have particular disease, you should discuss with your doctor about mammogram. But if you're in relatively good health condition, you should do mammogram every year.
That sounds like excellent advice. And also, when would be the recommended age to start undergoing mammograms for Asian American women, do you think, Dr. Chang?
Right now, the guideline for Asian women or any other ethnic woman is still 40 years above annual mammogram for 40 if you're 40 years and older. There's no specific guideline for Asian women, but if you have family history, you should discuss with your high-risk group, then you should discuss with your physician, and they might recommend you to start mammogram earlier.
Great. So Hannah A. did have one last question about mammograms. She did ask, what are the risks of radiation of a mammogram versus an ultrasound?
A mammogram, the radiation used in the mammogram is really, really low, and I think it's about 0.1 to 0.2 rad. And if in comparison, if for a regular one dose of radiation therapy for women during the course of breast cancer, is about 5,000 rad. So, but one mammogram is about 0.1 to 0.2. So, if you do it, even you start at age 40 and you do continue 40 years, will be much less than that.
Okay. So, well, we did have another question come in. It's a little bit more clinical, so I would like to direct it to Dr. Chen. It comes from Cindy M. She asks, I was diagnosed with lobular carcinoma in situ 3 years ago. All pathology reports came out fine. I don't carry a gene for ovarian or breast cancer. I am on tamoxifen for 5 years. Could you tell me how at risk I am still developing breast cancer? I would also like to know how you feel about breast implants for a person with my condition.
Sure. Lobular carcinoma in situ is a change in the tissue in the breast. It is not cancer, but it increases the risk of having cancer in the future in both of the breasts. Now, being on tamoxifen is a good strategy to reduce the chance of breast cancer. What the studies have shown with the NSABP P1 study examining the use of tamoxifen to prevent breast cancer, it's been shown that it reduces the risk by about 50% in this condition. So it cuts the risk down by about half. So it is a good strategy to be on. Now, in terms of breast implants, there is no association. It does not raise the risk of the patient having breast cancer in the future. The only difficulty may be that with an implant in place, it might be difficult to visualize certain lesions in the breast that may be very deep or in different areas of the breast. Our radiologists may not be able to see very well just because of the geometry of the implant in place. But having the implant by itself will not increase the risk of breast cancer.
Thank you so much for your answer. I'm sure Cindy would really like to hear from you, so thank you. So the next question comes from a Helen P., and she says, I am recently diagnosed with breast cancer. Family is very important to my culture, and I'm having trouble telling them, especially my parents and my children. I have only had the courage to tell my sister and my husband. Do you have any advice? Jesse, do you think you'll be able to give some advice to Helen?
I'm trying to. I can tell Helen must be in a very difficult situation at this point. Due to a cultural factor, usually Asian women who diagnosis with breast cancer or diagnosis of cancer, it's so difficult to disclose this news to the family member, especially those think it's vulnerable and difficult to accept the fact. I'm glad that she mentioned that her sister and her husband are the person that she can go for. So I would suggest that starting from sharing this news to her sister and also husband and gaining support from them. With that, I hope Helen will feel stronger in facing this difficult moment. And usually we have to remember treating cancer or facing the cancer, this journey is a learning process as well. And it can be also a time to help the family grow together and getting closer to each other. So I would suggest, really suggesting that with the help from the sister and also the husband, and there can be some time to talk together with the parents. With the children, it depends how old are they. If they are a younger kid, it maybe has to help them to get some material, help them to understand what kind of disease this is, that mom will, you know, drop here or will feel weak and not able to do more housework as before. So helping them to adjust the change that will come into the scenes. So that's the, my advice at this point to her. I hope that it helps, Helen.
I hope so. It does. I hope it will as well. But I do have actually some exciting news. We have a caller on the line who would like to ask a question. Are you there? Just hold on 1 second. Sometimes we have small technical difficulties. Hello?
Hold on. You cannot hear me?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
I can hear you.
Hi. Sorry. Now we can hear you.
Okay.
You have a question?
Yeah. Actually, I have a question for Dr. Chen. I know her personally. You know, I met her. I'm a radiation oncologist.
Oh, hello. Hi. Welcome.
Hi.
To the program.
Hi, Margaret. How are you?
Hi.
Because I remember your talk I put on my iPhone, so I just connected. I was listening. I have a question. You know, my office is in Flushing and, you know, Brooklyn. So, I have observed, you know, there's a lot of women, even like when I talk to my GYN doctor and other friends, when women got a mammography and ultrasound, a lot of them got like a positive bioride fall, right? And then they all got a biopsy. So what is the false positive rate? A false positive, for mammography alone, mammography plus ultrasound, and what is the false positive rate for biopsy, cone biopsy?
Sure, sure.
Sorry, I'm asking very
particular. Okay. Mammogram is very important. The current recommendation from the American Cancer Society is to have yearly screening mammograms starting at the age of 40. The screening mammogram is not a perfect test. It is not a perfect especially, you know, it could overdiagnose or it could underdiagnose and miss cancers. The false positive, meaning we see something on the mammogram, but we're not sure what it is. We have to proceed to a biopsy. It's about 10%. Now, in dense breast, it's even higher. And unfortunately, and as well as ultrasound, ultrasound also is not a perfect test. It's a supplement to the mammogram. It's not a perfect test. Again, it has an inherent false positive or false negative where it could overdiagnose or underdiagnose. You know, the best test, you know, at this point is if we do see something, we should proceed to have the biopsy for a more definitive answer as to what the lesion is in the breast.
Okay. Is there increasing number of people getting biopsy? Do you feel like compared to, for example, 5-10 years ago?
It's something that none of the tests are perfect. It is a balance that we have to do.
I know.
Age-specific.
But how do I tell my patients, like, if they ask me, like, how do I tell them, like, more than half of the biopsy may be, like, negative, right? Maybe more than that, like, 80% maybe.
Exactly.
Like benign, right?
80% of the biopsy is benign. But, you know, sometimes it's also, you know, when it comes out as benign, it's also reassuring to the patient and to the physician that the lesion is something that's not worrisome. So, you know, it's beneficial in that sense.
After the biopsy, if you get a negative biopsy, how often do you repeat the mammography? Or just once a year or once every 6 months? Or how
depends
do you
on
do
the
it?
Patient. Depends on what we see on the mammogram and on the ultrasound, the lesion. It really depends. Some of them we could follow with a 6-month follow-up mammogram or ultrasound. Some of them we could follow in a year. It really depends on the lesion.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much for your question. We do have a lot of questions today we have to get through.
Okay.
But I'm sure that we'll be able to do a follow-up on this regard, this topic at a later point. So thank you.
Yeah, okay. So I can hang up, right? I'll listen from the monitor.
We hope that you continue to tune in. Thank you so much for your question.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll move on to our next question, which comes from Kitty T. Dietary intake of tofu containing soy is a regular practice in Asian women's lifestyles, as is taking vitamins as a part of their disease prevention regimens. What roles do soy and vitamins play in breast cancer prevention? Dr. Chang, would you like to answer this question?
Sure. I think because Asian women, the incidence rate of breast cancer on average is lower than other women of other ethnic background. So I think there's a lot of thoughts about the link between the soy and breast cancer, low rate of breast cancer. However, there's many studies looking at this link, but so far the result has been conflicting and complicated. Depends, you know, how long you're starting. When you start soy and how long you have been on soy, so there's no one answer. And the same thing with looking at the vitamin level, and there's no consistent result. And sometimes actually, the study showed that increased risk of breast cancer in women with a higher level of certain nutrient. So again, I think there's no very solid scientific data to link any the beneficial factor or risk factor of diet and vitamin to breast cancer prevention.
Great.
American Cancer Society, mm-hmm. we recommend every woman have a, you know, just use the common sense. We suggest eat low fat diet and high in vegetable and the fruit. I think that will not just reduce the risk for cancer, but also will reduce the risk for many other diseases.
Yeah, so it sounds like it will help create a healthier lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. And also, remember, listeners, if you would like to ask any of our experts a question live, you can always call in. The number is 347-539-5189. You can always also send us a question through Twitter by mentioning our handle at Columbia Surgery. So we also have another question from Venezia S. She says that she is 65 years old and was diagnosed with an aggressive type of breast cancer, stage 1. She says that she's had the lump now for 2 years, it didn't hurt, and that she has kept a healthier lifestyle, but she's having trouble deciding whether or not to seek treatment. At this point in her life, she does not want to have chemotherapy as a preventative measure for reoccurrence. Could you offer her any advice? Dr. Chen, what do you think?
Okay, sure. You know, first, I'm sorry to hear that this patient's going through this, but know that, you know, the treatments are much better nowadays and people do very well. However, for stage one breast cancer, we know that there are different types of breast cancers. And even with stage one, you know, some of them are not aggressive, but some of them are aggressive, perhaps such as in this patient's case. So our understanding of the genetics and the biology of breast cancer are increasing, and we see that some of the aggressive breast cancers may express or overexpress certain genes of the ER, the HER2, the proliferation pathways that make it more beneficial to be treated by chemotherapy. So, you know, the ultimate decision would be a good discussion with your medical oncologist, whether you would benefit from the treatment with chemotherapy, and then make that decision together with your doctor that, you know, you feel comfortable for you.
Okay, so that sounds like a very, very good advice to give Venezia, and I'm sure she greatly appreciates it. We'll follow up with your response. It also sounds like we have another live caller. Just give us one moment to patch them through.
Oh, hi, Dr. Chen. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Ariana.
Yes, hi. How are you doing today?
Good. This is Brad. I have a question from a caller who called in and didn't want to actually be on the phone, but she had a couple questions for the three of you. The first one is, basically, she's had a lumpectomy, but she cannot do the radiation within the 8 weeks that her doctor recommended. What is the window for starting radiation after a lumpectomy? You know, can she wait?
Well, it is ideal to start radiation within that 8 week window period because the treatment results are best when you don't wait too long. So it is, you know, if it is at all possible to do it within that 8 week period. Do you know why she's not able to do that?
No, she did not say.
Okay, I mean, there are different radiation regimens. You know, sometimes the patient lives far away from the radiation center. It may not be easy for them to go every day for a six-week treatment period. But there are different regimens, you know, that may use a three-week treatment period, that might use a implantation device, that's a five-day course of treatment. You know, there are various regimens, and it is best that she talks to a radiation oncologist and figure out what's right for her.
Okay.
This is Linda Chan from American Cancer Society, and I think American Cancer Society do realize a lot of patients and some of the patients that they couldn't take the treatment, whether it's radiation therapy or chemotherapy, because the distance, the travel, you know, there's many cancer center. We know a lot of best cancer center is located in Manhattan, and if the patient lives far away, it's very convenient for them to travel every day to Manhattan to do the treatment. And also, you know, the lodging is very expensive in Manhattan. So American Cancer Society has this wonderful facility we call the Hope Lodge. It's really a place. It's like a five-star hotel, and for patient to stay absolutely for free during the treatment time. You know, they can stay as long during the as long as the treatment requires, and it's absolutely free. And if our principle is no patient should not taking the treatment to give the best outcome because the lack of lodging or transportation. So if they need any help, they can ask American call American Cancer Society, get support, get help. And if they are interested to use the facility or Hope Lodge, they should talk to the social worker at the hospital where they do the treatment.
Okay. There were a couple more questions that I had from this woman, but I actually have one more that I know we have time to do. She said she has stage 1, grade 2, breast cancer. The oncotype is 21. They didn't find any, you know, cancer in the lymph node. Is it necessary for her to do chemotherapy?
The best approach was still to be talked to her oncologist. You know, they would look at it, go over all these tumors with her and see if she would benefit from chemotherapy or not.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll go back to Ariana now.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. You know, I think I do think we have time for one more question. So I do want to get to this question from Mindy W. I am a woman in my late 20s with Chinese heritage. My mother was diagnosed with breast cancer, so I'm afraid I might be at risk too. What can I do to decrease my risk? Jesse, what are your thoughts?
I think women in this age usually, you know, is not above 40. It's out beyond the scope of the screening guideline, but because of the family history, so there is really a risk for them to worry about. So first of all, I would strongly suggest that talk to her doctor and about the family history, and if she can get, you know, a mammogram to check about that, that would be great. And how can she, you know, what she can do to decrease her risk? Like I said, first talk to the doctor and then say that if she can get this checking, this mammogram will be the first one. And then the other one, I guess, is keep herself healthy in different way and balanced diet and maintain a positive attitude. And all this mental, healthy mental positive attitude will do help people who stay well. And I believe that that's how she can help herself to reduce risk. Because all this things has to come with preventing, because not being too heavy in weight, no avoiding too healthy diet, that's the preventive rate.
Yeah, I agree with Jesse completely. And know that, please do know that breast cancer does occur in young women, and the trend is that the incidence is rising, and we see that in the article that was just published yesterday in the Journal of American Medical Association that found the incidence of breast cancer is rising in young women in their 20s and in their 30s since 1976. And this is also especially true for Asian women, where we see a lot of young women having breast cancer. So if they do find, if they do feel that there's something wrong with their breasts, if they do find a mass, they feel a lump in their breasts, they should see their doctors immediately and not dismiss it as normal changes, from hormones or from their cycles, but to seek medical attention immediately.
And actually, we did receive a question on Twitter of similar lines. The person asks, what are the relative contributions of environmental factors, diet, toxin exposures, and genes in eliminating breast cancer risks? So I think that they were very curious about environmental factors. Dr. Chen, would you like to continue answering this person's question?
Yeah, this is Minzer Chan. I think that's an excellent question, and I think we all, in the scientific arena, I think everybody try to work on this. Try to find the answer. And this is great study organized by American Cancer Society. American Cancer Society in general is we raise money to support biomedical research, but only one research we're doing. By American Cancer Society is called the Cancer Prevention Study. And right now we are doing the Cancer Prevention Study Phase 3. This is a longitudinal study. A lot of people, we try to recruit about 300,000 people. And the goal is to find the environmental factor and the cancer. It may not be the breast cancer per se, but it's trying to find the cause for cancer. The study one was done about over 30 years ago, and from the study confirmed the link of smoking and the cancer. And the second phase study, CPS2 study, find the link between obesity and the cancer and the many other diseases. So we are in the present. We are trying to recruit participants to participate in the CPS3 study, and the study basically will starting with a survey, and then we have many enrollment sites, and you can go on to cancer.org to find the enrollment site, and then you will fill out a survey form and with a very detailed background and the lifestyle questionnaire. And then you will give some a little bit blood sample and the waistline measurement. Then every year or 2 years, you will receive a questionnaire about your any lifestyle changes. And we hope by following 300,000 patients for 20 years, we'll be able to find the link between environmental factor and the breast cancer. So I really strongly encourage, especially from the minority community, participate in this study.
Great. Thank you so much. And I'm afraid we're out of time for today. But Dr. Chen, Dr. Chang, Jesse, thank you so much for your time. Your answers were very informative, and we enjoyed having you all on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So if you would like more information about the Columbia Clinical Breast Cancer Program, please visit our website at www.breastmd.org. Or if you would like to contact Dr. Chen's office directly, please call 212-305-9676. For more information about the American Cancer Society, you may also visit www.cancer.org, or you can call 1-800-227-2345. For further inquiries about patient support, you may also call their local office at 718-886-8890, extension 18. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Breast Cancer in Asian American Women, Incidence, Risk Factors, and Preventions. We apologize if you submitted questions to us today that we did not have time to answer during the show. As we mentioned earlier in the program, though, we will try to respond to you via email. Thank you for tuning in, and have a healthy day.